The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Yes, fun is good.
Yeah. Recording in progress.
All right, there you go. Fun is good. Let's get right into it, man. He is Mark Ingram, the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. I'm Tony Curry. Of course, we do a show called the UAB Director's Chair every week. Last week, we missed you. You were a little busy. You and I actually did speak, and you were like, hey, man, do we have to do a show today? I'm kind of like up to my neck in some negotiations, and I certainly understand that, of course, with Alex Mortensen, your new head coach for the UAB Blazers. Congratulations on finding the guy. You know, sometimes your best love's right underneath your nose, right?
Yeah, that's what it ultimately became is, Alex, we just had the opportunity to observe in a different way than we had been able to see before. When you're the coordinator, not the head coach, you're not in a position to be in front of the team and lead the team and lead the staff. And so over a period of time, we're able to watch that while we were interviewing all these other people. And we interviewed a lot of people. I interviewed a lot of people because I had time to. And I want to be thorough. You know, I said that in my press conference about him is I may be my own worst enemy. I'm thorough. And so sometimes thorough can be the enemy of speed. But it gave us the look, you're not going to hire another person from another staff in the middle of the season anyway until the last game. So really announcing him, 6 days after our last game was not a long time, though it may appear as though it is because we'd been without a permanent head coach for 7 weeks at that point. But it, like I said, while I'm interviewing these other people and thinking of the qualities that we want our next person, also kind of out of the side of my eye watching, and working with Alex. And it just became apparent that while there are a lot of we had a lot of great coaches, and I appreciate their interest and the opportunity to visit with them and hear their thoughts and ideas, too. It just became apparent that with his extensive amount of time in our state, which is like 12, 13 years at this point, when you add 3 years at UAB, 9 years in Tuscaloosa, and about a year at Samford as a student, he's got a lot of Alabama roots, really. And he grew up in Atlanta, which is close. He's worked with so many great other coaches from his time in Tuscaloosa that he's learned a lot and has a lot to glean from them in terms of how he would run the operation. And it's the daily operation that people don't really get. It's not just what happens on game day. It's how are we meeting every day? How are we operating every day? Like you literally put together everybody's schedule on the staff. Like, okay, everybody, you're going to meet as an offensive staff and a defensive staff at this time. We're going to do that for an hour, and then we're going to come together as a group, and then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to be together and do an hour of recruiting, and then we're going to break for lunch, and then we're going to – like you're doing that as the head coach all year.
Yeah.
It's not just show up to work and you've got some work to do and you just hang out and, knock it out on your own time. That's very structured every day of the year.
And I appreciate what you're saying. I know you're excited about this. I know that a coach is not hired or fired on one game, but let's face it, there are straws that break camel's backs. The Army game did that to Trent Dilfer this year. We certainly see it with other programs. The Memphis game obviously was huge, nice feather in the hat, and then they kind of fell off. And then all of a sudden, that last game where you were missing 39 or 40 players because of the stabbing and everything, and I thought it was really cool you were giving the guys the opportunity to sit out, and they come out and look gangbusters. Did that play anything in, maybe just tip the scale just a little bit to show that this team was like, because you have to have a pretty good leader to be able to pull that off.
Yeah. Well, don't forget that the four games, he bookended it, right? He beat Memphis and he beat Tulsa and he lost four in the middle. But two of those four were against South Florida and North Texas, who respectively were 1 and 2 nationally in offensive production.
Yeah.
So you're talking about two really good football teams, one of whom played in our championship. The other one, South Florida, was right barely outside of it. So, we should have beaten Rice and we could have beaten UConn. And I think with just more time and the right personnel in terms of personnel isn't just staff, personnel is players, I think in the future we can do that. It's about eliminating mistakes. Our game against UConn, our rushing yards, passing yards, and time of possession was the same as UConn, but we had four interceptions.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then Rice, we're winning at halftime. We had two penalties. Second half, we had nine. Mm-hmm. You just can't do that. If you clean that up, you win that game too. You know. So, but I was really impressed coming back to the start of your question, the Tulsa game, was really impressed by one, you know, that tragic incident happened the day of the South Florida game, and he got the kids to play that game. Mm-hmm. And there was only like three or four that didn't. And then the following week, so I want you to imagine now, it's Thanksgiving, and every student at UAB is at home with their family. Mm-hmm. If you're not an athlete, and even some athletes who are not in season, they're at home with their family. It's basically a week off. It's starting to get kind of cold here. It was a little gray and crummy, you know, and we're going to travel out to Tulsa to play a football game that win or lose does not put us in a bowl, doesn't put us in a, you know, a championship of any kind. It is totally about pride, totally about love of the game. And he got enough guys to go out there that really wanted to play football to go out there and play football and ultimately win that game on the road, which is the first road game we've won in 3 years.
Yeah,
and
since 2022. Yeah, I mean, it was impressive. Yeah. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Mike in Southside wants to know, during your coaching hiring, were there any Alabama high school coaches that, first of all, applied for the job, and were any of them looked at deeply? And he also asked about Rush Propst. Of course, that name pops up every time there's a local gig. We've certainly heard the story about Rush. We know he's a hell of a coach. Wherever he goes, he wins championships. He also has a lot of baggage. But did you ever consider looking at any high school coaches, maybe from Thompson, you know, just around that?
I appreciate that. Listen, I think high school coaches oftentimes are almost better coaches because they're focused on teaching the game. I think the high school coaches get easily discounted because of the level that they're at, but are usually many of them fantastic coaches, because not only are they doing all the things I was talking about daily structure, they also teach history, you know, and they run the weight room and they might have to line the field, you know. But no, I didn't speak to or interview any coaches, even in an informal way, from the high school ranks. The
last 2 years, if you go back 2 years from today, 49.1% of all universities at the D1 level fired and hired coaches, roughly half. It was about 60 coaches, which is by far the most coaches we've ever had. So, you know, our patience level is not, it used to be 3 years. Let me get my kids in here first, maybe 4 years. You could have four losing years. And by the fourth year, man, if it wasn't your kids getting it done, now it's like 2 years and we're starting to take a look at you. Cignetti, Key, Dillingham, Brom, Rule, Lashley, I could go on and on and on. This year, a lot of coaches had opportunities to use their programs as stepping stones, decided to stay put. What are you attributing that to? Obviously, the money is big. I get that. Yeah. But I mean, a lot of guys gave up Cignetti, for example, who's kind of a strange bird, but obviously number one in the country. By the way, I think it's a great question. Indiana's lost more football games in college football than any other program, yet they're number one in college football right now with a one seed, which is an amazing story. But yeah, signed the long-term deal. Deals, you know, deals don't mean anything. I mean, they don't. You're here, but he could leave next year if he wants to. But what does that say about the coaching carousel as we know it in college football right now?
Well, one, I would tell you that is important that fans too frequently get caught up in, as can we all. We need a name. We need a name that people under. Listen, Kirk Cignetti was at Elon. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then before that, he was at a Division III school that I don't remember, but he was at Elon, and then he was at James Madison, and then he went to Indiana in the Big Ten. So we get and nobody knew who Kirk Cignetti was until he started winning football games. Mm-hmm. That's when he has the famous line, "Google me." Yeah. You don't know who I am, Google me. But it's 100% right. People can coach. It doesn't matter what their name is or what logo is on their shirt. It's an unfortunate mistake that a lot of people make. I think, look, first of all, Indiana stepped up by all accounts, and don't worry about Kirk. He's going to be okay in terms of his finances. Same thing, Nebraska stepped up and gave Matt Rule an extension or something, and these other guys. So they ultimately ended up getting, I think, what they needed. When these coaches leave, let's just say Matt Rhule had gone to Penn State. So there was a lot of chatter because he's a Penn State alum that he was going to go to Penn State. Well, it's not just Matt Rhule going to Penn State. It's not just Julie Rhule and their beautiful children. Mm-hmm. It's like 50 other people.
Yeah,
that are on staff that mm-hmm. are full-time employees that also them and their families are now, you're deciding to just uproot everybody, and kids are in T-ball and they love their daycare and they love their high school and all those things. And you're forcing them to make that decision. So it's not just as simple as the head coach can get more money. Let's get up and go. The other thing is a full transition is hard. You transition a complete old staff and a complete new staff, man, that is a hard, hard thing. It is, there's a lot of work that has to be done by the administrative staff with the football staff to onboard them, you know, just like any standard orientation process that you have. But it's like rapid fire because they're also trying to now, they have to recruit the existing players to stay. That didn't used to be a thing. You got to recruit the team to stay and then also be heavy in this transfer portal recruiting nonsense. So it's a lot of work for them. So for those guys to pick up and leave, if you're in a good situation where people care about you and they show support, you're better off to just stick around where you're at.
Yeah. Mark Ingram, the UAB athletic director, joins us every single week and hear the show at least 5 days a week right here on Tony Curry Radio, where we get your YouTube. We do the show live so you can watch the show live. We haven't talked since Lane Kiffin took off and went to the LSU thing. And of course a duck is a duck is a duck. Anyone thought that maybe he grew up or he changed the way he does business finally got slapped in the face again with the way he left Ole Miss. And I get this question. I got 55 emails. Why can't coaches, you're an athletic director, why can't a coach, we knew that he was being looked at and we knew there was a possibility he was going to go to Florida. Good for them. They got out early. Like, we're not, listen, I asked you to prom and you keep telling me, I don't know. I wanted to see if my dress is ready by Saturday. Can you give me a few more minutes? No, you're either with me or you're not. In Florida, thank goodness, they're big enough that they backed out. Ole Miss tried to give them the farm. I know it comes down to money. He's sitting there saying he didn't know anything about the money, which is a bunch of hogwash.
Yeah.
But the way he left the program and I believe that Ole Miss is better with Lane Kiffin, even if he's not paying attention to his own program in the playoffs, than they are with Pete Golding. But I digress. Why doesn't a coach in his position just say, listen, I have a coach to team here. I have a team to coach and I'm focused on that. And I don't want to answer any more questions about this. And when I'm ready to tell you, I'll do it. And he could have easily said, listen, I got more opportunities to win national titles at LSU. Why can't you just tell the truth? All college football fans know that. We know the last three coaches before Brian Kelly won national titles at LSU. It's a great program. It's okay. To say the truth. I mean, it really is. So why does he sit there? Why in his particular case does he have the big announcement thing? Is it all ego? I mean, why can't these coaches keep their mouth shut? I mean, that's what they have agents for, to go through all that. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, I worked with Lane. I feel like I know him reasonably well. I don't see it the way that you're seeing it or describing it. I think it's an impossible position that the coaches are in. The problem, you're saying, why can't they tell the truth? Well, the truth is upsetting to the Ole Miss people that have been supporting him and that community have been supportive. And I don't think he wants to say, I don't think you can win a national title here. By the way, they're in the playoff.
Yeah.
So I don't think he wants to say that because that's an insult. And I don't know if he feels that way, but based on just, you know, what has come out, that's what it appears. So I think he doesn't want to be insulting, honestly, is part of it. But it's an impossible situation. So I think, and I had a conversation with another AD and our commissioner this week, there's a group, there's a committee that's looking at the football calendar. And so I called and spent about an hour with this guy on the phone who's chairing that committee. To tell him what I thought was the problem. So it's interesting that you ask this. So you remember you've got school to deal with. So you've got a fall and a spring and the season, if you're in the playoffs or if you have a January bowl game, and frankly, even if you have a bowl game after, it's most bowl games, anything after, call it Christmas, It is a real problem in terms of keeping a kid who plans to enter the transfer portal or who plans to try very hard to go pro. you also have that problem with the coaches. So here's what I suggest is that number one, we eliminate the December signing day. If you don't have the early signing day, which is strictly designed to try to relieve pressure for the high school player. And, yeah. and that was done with good intentions. But when that was done, you didn't have the transfer portal and you couldn't transfer around. So that didn't exist. Mm-hmm. You'd have to deal with that. You'd have to deal with your own roster. So we got to go away from the December signing period and move that back to February like it used to be. So now I have less pressure as an AD to make a decision in the middle of the year. It's unfair, frankly. And look, and I did it. It is unfair to your existing team to make those decisions. You're trying your best not to say this season doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're trying to say this season does matter, but I eliminated the head coach. I mean, that's a tough conversation to have. And so the players feel like they've been a bit abandoned, you know, and given up on. That's not fair to them. They have a limited amount of eligibility. So you're trying to protect your existing team. No offense to the high school kids, but they're not here yet. Let's make sure we're doing right by our existing student athletes. And then you got all these people that respectfully, they have jobs. These are their jobs. Yeah. So give them a chance to fight through the season, right? And so we went to one transfer portal, which is January. This year's January 2nd to 16th. I say you eliminate the January portal and you just do the spring. Now, the coaches initially would push back on this because they said, gosh, I don't want to be in a position to not know who my team is until June. I get that. However, here's what I would say. You eliminate spring football. You don't have it anymore. You just train. Okay, so now with the portal being at the end of the spring, if you want to use the Lane Kiffin LSU example, Lane would be able to coach through the entire year and not be disadvantaged by not being able to go to LSU and recruit the existing LSU players to stay, number one. Number two, he wouldn't have to worry about trying to recruit other portal kids in because the portal wouldn't open up until called the end of April.
Yeah.
And so he could stay at Ole Miss that whole time and LSU could make their decision. He could move there after the season over. He could stay with Ole Miss. Ole Miss would have time to get a new person in and there wouldn't be any disruption in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
But these kids who want to get in the portal in the middle of the season, I mean, there's kids, these playoff teams are going to have kids get in the portal because they don't play enough.
Yeah,
I want to go a place I can play. Yeah. You got a kid in Indiana that's like, I'm going to leave and get in the portal. And it's like, we're making a championship run. And the kid's going to be like, yeah, you are, but I don't play, so I want to go somewhere else. Well, you think, well, that doesn't hurt Indiana because he wasn't going to play anyway. Well, he practiced.
Yeah.
He practiced, and you need him for practice. So it's an upsetting situation.
Yeah, I for the people that gave Lane a hard time for pulling his entire staff, I'm like, they weren't going to keep that staff anyway. So it's like, well, he took 8 or 9 guys with him. Well, what did you think was going to happen? I mean, that's what those guys do when Papa gets a better game.
Well, if they don't do it, yeah. Tony, they're on it. If they don't do it, they risk being unemployed.
Yeah, exactly. Why did you put the job opening on Indeed and LinkedIn?
I didn't.
what was the story behind that? Because I got a million people asking me that question. I'm like, and so I thought it was funny too. I'm not sure how it made your program look, but what was that? How'd that even get started?
Tony,
what was
critics that? Are going to criticize regardless. You know, the negative people want to be negative. They're only happy when they're unhappy. What happens is that every single job, first of all, every state job has to be posted on your university's employment website.
Okay.
So our head coaching job, just like any assistant or any marketing director, has to be posted on the university's website, which then automatically gets picked up by these other sources like Indeed and LinkedIn. Gotcha. We did not post the job.
I
went to my personal LinkedIn account and said, hey, if anybody was like, whatever.
Well, you know, yeah, I know several UAB fans that would be the first ones that would want that job too.
Pretty funny. I thought it was funny.
No, I thought it was pretty hilarious myself. Two words. How do the words private equity make you feel? Okay. Then explain to me, because this is something you're going to hear a lot of. I guess it's Otros or Otros, O-T-R-O. It's a capital company out of Utah, has promised the Utes that they're going to raise somewhere north of $400 million for their program. And obviously they will be a for-profit business. They'll be in business with the university. So they're getting a cut. And basically they're what are they, a collectible, but they're for business, right? I mean, it's for money. And this is going to be the next big thing because it, you can you talk about how that's going to influence college sports and how that's going to change things? Because that's a big nut.
Well, the issue becomes how do those people get paid back? How do the private equity investors get paid back? Mm-hmm. And if there's enough new revenue to pay them back and us make a new profit, I'm all ears. I haven't had anybody explain that in a way that would work for us yet. And the most simple way I can say it is if we borrowed $100 million and through private equity, I have to pay them back 15% to 20% or at an interest rate of 15% to 20%. Well, I could go borrow that from the bank. I could go to a lender. Our borrowing capacity for UAB is strong. Yeah. I could probably get that at like 3%. So why would I go from take it from private equity who may have, even if contractually they don't have any say in what we do, they're going to be in my ear about what we do and how we do it. And, you know, so I would just say that, like, I don't understand why you use a 15% to 20% interest rate when you can get it for 3%. That's my number one thing. So I don't know enough about the Utah deal. Are they getting, I don't know, additional staffers from the private equity firm to help raise this capital and generate new revenue and all that? And I'm all for being entrepreneurial. I think that's creative. But just listening to my own ADs in the American, there's a lot of questions around what I just stated, which is why would we take that money at such a high rate when we can get it for less?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Before we get into basketball, I did want to ask you one more question about Alex Mortensen, because a lot of people know, of course, who his dad was. And so he's got a name and somewhat of a brand. And he's been in the program, like you said, for 13 years, 3 years with UAB, 9 years with the University of Alabama, or just north of 9 years. Is there anything particularly interesting about Alex that is unlike any other coach that you've ever had to hire?
Well, and
it can be like, maybe you don't like crust on his sandwiches. I mean, I don't know. it could be whatever, but is there anything interesting about him that perhaps, I'm not telling you to tell any dirty secrets or anything, but obviously, you know, he's good. You know, he looks at the big picture. He wants to make men out of boys, blah, 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 blah. We get all that crap. Okay. Right. Is there anything in particular that like he likes to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning? I dig that. Or is there anything in particular that is poetic for you to bring justice to for him?
He's a very routine guy, which is not unusual. I can tell you some things. I don't know how different they are from everybody, but one of the things that's really impressive about him is he is like this sponge of a person. He is constantly asking questions about, well, just all sorts of things. And when other people speak, he's taking notes. I don't think he's doing that for fun. I think mm-hmm. he's doing that because he's really interested, and he'll hear some idea and he'll say, "Ooh, I like that." And he'll write that down. And he's very, I don't know if moldable is right, but he wants to do a great job. He's pulling ideas from all these people he worked with: Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, Mike Locksley, Nick Saban, pretty good. That, you know, all the things, the little things that they taught him and showed him, Bill O'Brien. But then trying to be himself. And I've told him that. I'm like, from the very first week when he became the interim, I was like, look, man, don't try to think to yourself, how am I supposed to act?
Yeah.
Just be Alex. Just be yourself.
Just be yourself, yeah.
You know, and that's going to resonate much better. Too many of these guys that work for Coach Saban think they have to go wear a straw hat at practice now. You know, and it's like, that doesn't make Nick Saban great.
Yeah.
Saban wears a straw hat at practice. That doesn't mean that you're going to be Nick. Pull his practice plan and his recruiting strategy and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Use those things to your advantage. But he's just really interested in trying to take all the best ideas from anybody else. Like he asked me, which I think is a very mature question. He said, I know you interviewed a lot of people. Can we talk about ideas that they all had for culture building? Because that's their biggest challenge, right? I say their biggest, one of the many very large challenges that these coaches have in every sport. But in football, they're going to have 50 new people. in the locker room. So what we used to think of as senior leadership, well, those, a lot of our seniors were at a different school last year.
Yeah.
So they don't know how we dress, how we travel, how we eat, how we meet, how we stretch, how we do anything.
Does Alex get pissed off? Okay, good. Because I was going to say he looks like I was going to ask you if he's a player's coach, which is too early to kind of tell. But he looks like he's a really laid back kind of cat, which is great when you're winning football games.
It's great. Yeah, because you got to be that way. And, you know, he's been the same guy in every conversation. I mean, yeah, I do mean this, Tony. Look, when I've had the good fortune of being in the locker room after a football national championship win. I've been in a locker room with a team who became bowl eligible for the first time in a long time. Mm-hmm. And then I was in that locker room at Tulsa with those kids after Thanksgiving. I'm going to just tell you, those locker rooms, all three of those locker rooms, same room.
Yeah.
Same room. And Alex, after the Memphis game, Alex in the office and Alex in that locker room at Tulsa,
even keel.
Same guy.
Good.
And so it's just hard to be. It's hard to be that. And it's a testament to his ability, his calm, you know, demeanor.
I have not got a chance to go check out Hoops. It's just been too crazy around here. And of course, I can't wait to get down there and kind of after football season's over, then I can really set my sights on the round ball there. But you got Troy coming up this Sunday on the 14th. Nice win against Drake. 7-3 for the UAB Blazers.
They've had a long time since before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
We had this long road trip and have done really well. Dropped one game at Middle, but otherwise won the rest of them, which is really hard to do.
It seems to me, too, that they're playing. I don't like when people say they're playing to their level of competition, but it looks like UAB can play any style and win at any style. Does that make sense? I mean, it doesn't have to be a 98-95 game. It's not going to be like a North Texan 55-54 game, but it looks like they can hurry up if they need to. They can slow it down if they want to, and that takes a lot of chemistry, and to do that 10 games in the season tells me something.
Yeah, look, Andy, I think it does a great job of adjusting when he needs to adjust. And as the players start to understand the system that he wants to run on both sides of the ball, including, you know, offense, defense, and his press, then they can play more instinctively without having to think about, wait, am I supposed to be at the top of the key or on the block? Where am I? You know, any of that. The longer they do it, the more rhythm they get and play instinctively. Mm-hmm. The better they, you know, Andy's teams always seem to improve sort of game by game. So, yeah, we've got Troy at home on Sunday at 2:00, first home game in a while. Hope our fans will come out and show their appreciation. Those kids are playing good basketball. It's fun to watch.
All right, man. Chill out. We'll be together again next week. Of course, the following week will be Christmas. You know, I don't take time off. So anytime you want to do a show, you'll be director's chair. You want to do something on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, or whatever, you know where to find me.
I'll see you next week.
Okay, let's do a show next week, and then we can figure out what we're going to do after that. But happy holidays. Give the family my love, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, Tony. See you, pal.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.